is the Leadership Momentum Podcast with Chris Brown.
Well, hello, leaders. I want to welcome you to the Leadership Momentum Podcast. My name is Chris Brown, and I am your host. And I'm really excited about today's episode and got a lot of great content today that I want to make sure that we get it all in. So I'm going to jump right to the meat as fast as possible. Our guest today is Mark Batterson. He serves as lead pastor of National Community Church in Washington, D.C. One church, eight locations. National Community is focused on reaching emerging generations and meets in theaters throughout the D.C. metro area. You might have referred to National Community Church before as Theater Church. That is their website, theaterchurch.com. And National also owns and operates the largest coffee house on Capitol Hill. I love that, when evangelicals have such great assets in such an influential city. Mark Batterson holds a Doctor of Ministry degree and is a New York Times bestselling author of 11 books. And I know many of you have probably read several of them. Today, what we're going to do is we're going to take a deep dive into donor development. And, you get Mark Batterson on the line. There's a lot of different things you can talk to him about. But as I read several of his books, I noticed a common theme of God really showing up through large gifts at his church. And I just want to kind of, from an operational standpoint, obviously we know what's going on spiritually. From a leadership standpoint, what are some things that we can learn when it comes to what he's experienced? And so we're going to go to that interview in just a second. And after that, I want to share with you some notes from Bill Hybels. He came and spoke at a roundtable I was at a few years ago, and he shared his top lessons learned about stewardship and donor development over the last 40 years. And it is very insightful stuff. So we got a packed episode today, and we're going to start off with this great short conversation with me and Pastor Mark Batterson. Well, Mark, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Hey, thanks, Chris.
Yes, I'm honored to talk with you. I know that you were with us, last year at our Stewardship Summit and really enjoyed spending time with you. And of course, all of us have enjoyed reading your books. The two that stood out to me the most was actually when I was called into ministry, Pastor Stephen Furtick actually gave me In a Pit with a Lion on a Snowy Day. And it's kind of what drove me to jump into ministry. So I don't even know if I've ever told you that. And then Circle Maker, I can remember running all through South Florida listening to you on audio. So thank you so much for your resources. In those books, you had talked about some really cool gifts that you've received as a pastor. And I'm not talking about gifts like a necklace. I'm talking about some major million-dollar gifts. And they're very unique, the way it all happened and transpired. And so I just wanted to dive into that and kind of do a deep dive into donor development. And so I know some of these, you got these gifts, and obviously it was just out of left field. But I think a lot of them, obviously you've probably looked back and tried to learn, okay, what was it that went into that, that made that happen outside of obviously God's will and God's hand? I know that. But what are some things that we can learn from your engagement? So that's kind of where I wanted to go. Are you cool with that?
Yeah. Yeah, right. I love it. And this is fun, Chris, because this is this wouldn't be the normal conversation piece for me, but it's fun because it's some of the miracles that God has done. So let me say a couple of things up front. First of all, none of these gifts were given in our first 10 years as a church. In our first 10 years, I don't think we ever had a gift that was more than, let's just say, $10,000. And so this was not right out of the gate, and I think it's important to say that. The other thing that I would say is that I really believe leaders have to set the example. So one of our four family values is generosity, and one of my goals is to eventually get to 1090, that we're living off of 10%, giving 90%, and through writing, honestly, Chris, the Lord's enabled us to be able to give far more than I ever thought we would. And I'll be point blank. That's part of the joy of writing, that I know that it can bless people via reading. But then what we've done over the years is we've escalated the amount that we give away with each book. And we've had books where we haven't taken any income. And so let me just say that as a leader, you've got to set the example. And my wife and I, Chris, we love to give. We love it. It's just our heartbeat. And so I think it's important to say that up front.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you did, because folks could have been listening in and going, I haven't got a $1 million gift yet or whatever. So I love the fact that you threw that disclaimer out there for sure.
Yeah. And so to set the context a little bit, Chris, you know, I pastor a church that the first 10 years was about 80% single 20-something. So you're not talking about people that are at a prime income generating stage of life. You know, a lot of Hill staffers who are making ends meet, you know, baristas, teachers, that kind of person. But about 12 years in, we bought a crack house. We turned it into a coffee house. And by the way, every penny of profit we give to missions, we've given more than $1 million to missions now via our coffee house. And when we built it, I just felt spurred to pray that God would do a $2 million miracle. And I didn't feel like it was just an idea. I felt like it was a God idea. And we prayed for that for years. And so one day I got a phone call from someone I hadn't met who goes to our church. And they said they wanted to get together and talk with me. And I almost said no, Chris. And I'm glad I didn't, because they came in and for about an hour and a half grilled me with every kind of question, not the kind of questions I really wanted to answer. But at the end, after asking about church structure and governance and those kinds of questions, they said, hey, can we tell us your vision? And at that point, like, I just cut loose, and I, you know, 20 expressions by the year 2020, a dream center. You know, we want to give $2 million to missions per year, and they walked out, and I wasn't sure anything would come of it. But about a month later, they called back and said, "Hey, you have vision beyond your resources, and we want to help with that." And that was our first $3 million gift. And we've received gifts since then that have been larger than that. But I think it was, you know, staying faithful. And that eventually God's going to bring people into your midst that are going to help you accomplish that vision. Here's the one kind of maxim that I live by. Don't let your budget determine your vision. Make sure that your vision is determining your budget. Now, don't go and hire 15 staff that you're going to have to fire in a year. But you get the idea that you cannot let that budget determine your vision. In fact, you need a vision that's big enough that's going to draw those people that want to invest in something that's bigger than they are.
Wow, that's intense. So let's break down that conversation you had. It was a sticky conversation. It was tense. You didn't really want to engage in it. You had to kind of, like, I don't know, just really dig deep inside of you. So if you were to dissect that now, kind of like you're hovering over at 30,000 feet, what was it that attracted them to your leadership specifically? What was it that they trusted, and your vision? Like, what was it that you think attracted them to your vision? I mean, yeah. And I don't want anyone to hear this and feel like they have to duplicate exactly what you did. You just get the concepts and the points out of it.
Yeah. Well, I think one thing I learned initially, Chris, is that a high-end giver, you know, if they're going to invest in a company, they're going to do their due diligence. They're going to check under the hood. They're going to kick the tires. They're going to want to make sure it has good leadership, because they don't want to invest in something that's not going to have a good ROI. Mm-hmm. And I think good givers approach their giving the same way. And so, you know, all they were doing was just asking the right questions to make sure that there was going to be a return on this investment. So, you know, don't be surprised if people ask you some of those tough questions, and don't be put off by that. No, that forces us to be above board and to do what we do with diligence and excellence. So, you know, I think you've got to have a vision that's beyond your resources, mm-hmm. frankly. And ours was. And I think one other thing that drew them to us is they loved the way that we prioritized missions giving. So Chris, this year we'll take 34 missions trips. And so we're always coming and going on mission. And then last year, we gave about $4 million to missions. Now, $2 million of that was to finish construction on our Dream Center. But then $2 million of it was towards foreign missions, towards some local causes that we believe in. And we started giving to missions, Chris, when our income was $2,000 a month. And so, and it cost $1,600 to rent the public school where we were meeting. So there was $400 for our salary and all other expenses. And I felt the Lord speak to me and say, I want you to start giving to missions. And so we gave our first $50 check in 1996. And Chris, we haven't looked back. I just believe that you've got to prioritize that. And when you do, then God becomes your advocate and he's going to look out for your bottom line. So the people who gave this gift, they loved that backstory that we were intentional about giving sacrificially and generously ourselves.
That you are modeling what you're asking them to do.
Yeah.
So you want to be vulnerable. You want to be transparent with the finances and the governance and those kind of things. Where's the line where you give them, there's too much transparency and you're giving them a little bit too much exposure to the behind the scenes?
Wow, great question.
Or is there a line?
Well, you know, every leader listening to this knows that you learn the hard lesson that you've got to have a communication sequence. You know, you don't want to be sharing things with the congregation and then your staff find out about it secondhand or your leadership. So, you know, these are delicate, kind of fragile matters, but you know, I've always tried to err on the side of putting cards down on the table face up and letting people see who we are, what we're about. You know, anybody can request a copy of anyone who's a leader at NCC who is giving can request our audit. If they want to see our books, they can come in and meet with our CFO, and we've had people do that. And so, you know, you want to engender a degree of confidence, and one way that you do that is you don't hold your cards too tight, and you try to share the way that you prioritize your finances and let people kind of into that world, especially people who want to make a significant investment. I think it's okay to do that to a measure that isn't, I guess, illegal or unethical, shall we say.
Mm-hmm. There's some situations, and when you're thinking about donor development, that are more reactive. Somebody comes up and they say, hey, I've got 100 grand to give you, or 10 grand, depending on the size church that you're at and in your context. But maybe it's $1 million and you're kind of reactive. What are some vital components that go into proactive donor development? So you know they've got the means, you know they have the heart, and not in a manipulative way, in a developing that skill and that gift in them, the gift of giving, with a pure heart. What are some vital components into developing donors?
Well, if you want to develop donors, I think part of it is relationship. And now here you have to be careful that you're not showing favoritism. But as a leader, you're going to allot your time investment in a strategic way that your key leaders, you're going to spend more time with. And I would say in the same sense, I don't think there's anything wrong with investing time and energy in people that are going to help propel the vision. Again, I don't think you've got to guard your heart. I think you got to be careful not to treat other people as less. That's a huge danger. But I think it's okay to show genuine gratitude, to build authentic relationship, and find ways to continue to disciple those people that are key givers, because God sent them to you, and that's not an accident. And so it's something that has to be nurtured intentionally.
For any pastor who gets a large gift, what do you think it is about that particular pastor who gets a large gift that God trusts them? What is it in their leadership that God trusts them enough to be able to receive and to be able to handle that size of a gift? What do you think it is in their leadership that, you know, God can trust?
Wow. Well, that's a wonderful question. And I think the answer to the question is almost one of the words that was embedded in the question, Chris, and it's the word trust. And trust is not developed overnight. I think you need a track record as a leader. And so again, it was more than a decade into pastoring this church before we got that first $3 million gift, and then some of the gifts that have followed that. And so I think you've got to prove faithful. You've got to keep doing the right things day in and day out. And when you do, I really believe that God has a way of showing up and showing off. And you've got to keep your focus in the right place. And so we want to grow more so that we can give more. Our goal is not to just accumulate something. We want to grow more so that we can give more. And God knows that. He knows our heart. So we have three core convictions, Chris. Church ought to be the most creative place on the planet. Church belongs in the middle of the marketplace. And God's going to bless us in proportion to how we care for the poor and how we give to missions. And it's that third one that if we're prioritizing caring for those who have less, and giving to the Great Commission, to the gospel being spread, then I have every confidence that God's going to look out for us. And one way that he does that is by sending people your way that have the means to help further that mission.
Mm, that is so good. Man, I am so thankful for you and thankful for National and all the resources that you give us, and we're all growing because of it. And thank you for leading out when it comes to this vulnerability, when it comes to this transparency, when it comes to the trust. And I think about 1 Corinthians 4:2, those who have been entrusted to be managers must prove faithful, and you're doing that. And thank you for modeling that for us, and thank you for your time today.
Hey, Chris, no, thank you. You guys are pushing the envelope. And can I share one little anecdote?
Yes, please.
You know, when we were together and at the last summit gathering, you had Craig Groeschel and Robert Morris share kind of in a round table sort of setting. And I remember walking away from that event saying to myself, well, before I came here, I thought I was a visionary, and then I heard Craig speak, and I thought I was generous, and then I heard Robert speak, and I realized that there's still a little bit of headroom. There's some room for me to grow in those areas, and so I just want to say to everybody that's listening, you know, none of us has arrived, yeah. And that's the fun thing about stewardship, isn't it? That there's always more potential to be a better steward of the time, talent, and treasure, and so thank you. For pushing the envelope, and fun to be able to have a little off-the-cuff conversation.
Thank you for humility in that, but you definitely are leading the way. Yeah, Craig and Robert are doing a great job as well. And everyone listening in, hey, I don't know if it's 12% going to missions or 14, but look at that budget. Maybe you need to go 14 to 15. Maybe that's a little small step, or maybe it's being a little bit more aware of the people in your church that have that particular gift, that they need to be discipled in their gift, just like somebody who's a greeter, just like somebody who is in kids ministry. But we need to disciple them. And, you know, a lot of times the most ignored demographic in the church today is the wealthy. The thing is they don't raise their hands. They're a little bit more low maintenance. They're the last ones to inside service and the first ones to leave. They don't come all the time because they're really busy people. And we need to be very, very mindful to make sure they're discipled just like everyone else. Well, Pastor Mark, thanks again for your time.
Chris, thanks so much. Bye.
Well, I told you that was going to be a great conversation with Mark Batterson, and great content, of course. If you want to connect with Mark, his website is markbatterson.com, and on social media, he's Mark Batterson. He got his name on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and that's Mark with a K. By the way, if you don't know already, and you're a big fan of Batterson books, he just came out with a new book this month called Play the Man, Becoming the Man God Created You to Be. And there's more information about that at playtheman.com, and a tremendous resource. I had the privilege to be able to interview Mark about that book specifically on my other podcast, Chris Brown's True Stewardship, and that was a very insightful conversation as well. definitely a great resource. Now, I told you earlier that I wanted to share with you top lessons learned about stewardship and donor development from Bill Hybels. He came and shared these at a stewardship summit that we hosted here at Ramsey Solutions a couple years ago, and just very insightful stuff, and I was riding a mile a minute. And so really, I'm sharing these with you from my notes so you guys can kind of almost be in the room. And it was a great, great meeting with a lot of the most influential pastors in the country, and they're all sharing what they learned. But then Bill Hybels stopped by and shared what he learned, and we all were taking notes pretty aggressively. So I'm going to share them with you, okay? Number one, people want to know stuff. People want to know stuff. He referenced a time where they went door to door there at Willow Creek, door to door for 6 days a week for 6 weeks, asking people one specific question, asking, why do you not go to church? And most of them said, it all came back to this common theme. They said, all the church wants is my money. And he suggested that maybe it's deeper than that. Maybe it's because they do not see any return on the back end. And it's because we don't communicate enough. What he's learned over 40 years, we don't communicate enough. He referenced a time where there was a line formed 50 people deep after a service when he had announced something after some kind of a change in the organization or a change when it came to money. And they all were asking, how come you didn't tell us? And he referenced that time. And so he goes on to say he had always struggled telling the congregation how much they need because the numbers got so big. And maybe you're there. Maybe you're in that spot and the numbers got so big that now you've stopped to tell people the numbers. Well, now it's a common practice at Willow Creek, January through December, has conversations with the congregation, 1 to 3 minutes each week before he speaks the message and talks about the situation, where they're at. And he doesn't share numbers, but he shows the below and above budget. He shows shares percentages sometimes as well. But the bottom line is people want to know stuff. Okay, number two, people will sacrifice. People will sacrifice if we are willing to ask them to sacrifice. And he goes on to say, don't propose a giving campaign when there's not sacrifice involved. And what that does is that undersells the value of the need. And no believer should go through the journey without experiencing going all in. That's what we want for them. Sell something, give something. He even suggested, hey, heads bowed. Who is willing to sell something for this cause? To not shy away from that. It's you're cultivating a gift, and that sacrifice is good. It's part of their journey. Number three, people need routine stewardship coaching, specifically on earning all you can earn. You heard me right. People need routine stewardship coaching on earning all you can earn. Are you stewarding your talents and your gifts like you should? He also goes on to say, hate debt like you hate the Green Bay Packers. That's a true Chicago guy. Hate debt like you hate the Green Bay Packers. That makes sense in their context. Those of you that know that rivalry, you know what I'm saying. So that was another one. Number four, people know if you're teaching stewardship for them or for you. People know if you're teaching stewardship for them or for you. So make sure your heart is right before you start. Number five, people demand and deserve total transparency from the church. He says, we must open up the finances to the congregation. Obviously, the appropriate amount of transparency, right? You don't need to know what every single person's making, their income, right? But we got to open up the finances to the congregation. Otherwise, there will be a gap in trust and many will not be motivated to give. The assumption is that pastors are crooks, so we need to overcompensate for that. I hate that, but that's just there's a perception out there. And really, I think it's more of an excuse for many folks, but let's overcompensate for that. And then he goes on to say this. This is really, really good. Why would you offer cynical people bullets to shoot you with by wearing and driving and living extravagantly? That's not just for lead pastors, y'all. Let me say it again. Why would you offer cynical people bullets to shoot you with by wearing and driving and living extravagantly. It's just a thought. Number six, the congregation would benefit from a financial curriculum. The congregation would benefit from a financial curriculum. And the lead pastor, this is his words, and the lead pastor has to feel the weight to get people in the seats and needs to visit the Financial Peace University classes. He even goes on to say, graduate people in the weekend services. We owe our congregation the tools and the equipping. And it reminds me of a great quote I heard somewhere, but you can't expect what you don't equip. Number seven, people love to give to vision most. Love to give to vision. And people will give 10 times more when hearing white hot vision. People love to give to vision. He goes on to say, we casted a vision for an $11 million care center right in the middle of the 2008 recession because the vision was white hot. Now, I know that's a huge number. Maybe you're listening in and you're at a church of 400, but it's all relative. Okay. So what would big number be for you? Okay. So maybe it's $1 million. Well, he did that. Maybe it's $500,000. They did that right during the recession, white hot vision, and it came to pass. Number eight, people like appreciation coming their way from time to time. In your culture, make sure you thank everyone, including givers, new givers, any raise in contribution, any gift over a certain size. Make sure that you've got some systems to be able to do that. People like appreciation. And what I like to tell them, folks, is, you know, that you will steward their gift incredibly. Make sure they're confident in that and, you know, teach and recognize the spiritual gift of giving. You know, gifts of giving will never be developed unless we teach on it, unless we call it out, just like the rest of the gifts. God gives those folks the ability to earn a lot. And of course, we need to disciple them to live below their means, right? And not to be giving outside of their budget where they didn't plan for it. But these folks have an uncommon joy to resource kingdom efforts, and we need to call that out. And the last thing Bill Hybels shared was have an offsite where the team can totally reset the vision for the need of stewardship ministry in your church. Find out if there's a toxic thinking, like we want to talk about money as little as possible and barely reach budget, and then have the conversation while you're there. He says, do we want to develop fully devoted followers of Christ or fully devoted stewards of Christ? So like I said, very, very powerful stuff coming from Bill Hybels' appearance and a roundtable that we had a couple years ago. I knew you guys would enjoy that. And my prayer is that you guys take those principles from Bill Hybels, those principles from Mark Batterson, and you got to ask yourself, how well are we developing the gift of givers within our ministry? Don't just rely on executive leadership or senior leadership, those of you in a bigger church. No, how are you in your ministry developing? You're already developing volunteers. You're already developing a lot of gifts in people. But how are you taking on the ownership of creating a culture of generosity in the church? You, in your ministry, how are you doing that? It's not just something for central support to do. Those of you in the multi-site model, which there's over 8,000 churches in the multi-site model, don't just rely on central or global or whatever you call it. No, your ministry. How are you cultivating generosity in the church so that they can exercise this joy of giving in a more healthy and scalable way? So anyway, great podcast today. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. And like I said earlier, I did interview Mark Batterson on my other podcast as well. If you're not familiar with that podcast, I want you to know about it. It's called Chris Brown's True Stewardship, and it is a podcast that is more geared for the congregation. It's to come alongside your teachings, to complement your teachings, and to teach them about stewardship. It's a free resource. It's right in their ears. And they can download it anytime they want on iTunes, Google Play, stewardship.com. And I've got several that are telling me all the time at events, hey, thank you so much. Since I've been listening to your podcast, I've began to tithe and my life is changing right before my eyes. Several people do that. I don't talk about tithing the whole time, but it's just one way that I can come alongside you as a leader and help you. And we can work together as people take their steps towards being a fully devoted steward for Christ. managing God's blessings God's way for God's glory. Y'all, it's been fun. Hope you've enjoyed today's podcast. And until next time, let's continue. You and I, as leaders, managing our leadership, which is a blessing from God, God's way for God's glory.
Thanks for joining us for the Leadership Momentum Podcast with Chris Brown, brought to you by Ramsey Solutions. To learn more about Momentum, go to stewardshipcentral.org/solutions. If you'd like to learn how other leaders are reclaiming biblical stewardship, head over to stewardshipcentral.org. Loved what you heard today and didn't want to miss another episode? Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. While you're there, share your feedback by leaving a review. Finally, stay up to date with Chris Brown, including his podcast, Chris Brown's True Stewardship, on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram by following @ChrisBrownOnAir. On behalf of your host, Chris Brown, and the team at Ramsey Solutions, thanks for joining us for the Leadership Momentum Podcast.